Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, this is episode 16 of the DesignFootball.com podcast. My name is Jay. I've been away, but I'm back now. I'm the resident blogger on DesignFootball.com. Today, I'm joined by Colin Ford, who is a long-term kit industry insider in various forms. Hi, Colin. How are you?
Hi, Jay. Delighted to be here. Thanks very much.
Okay, so tell us how you got into the kit industry. Industry or sportswear industry, because it's taken many, many forms, how the work that you've done. So how did you get into it originally?
I started when I was a kid. When I was about 10 or 11, I got a box of crayons and I got a ruler and I started designing football kits on. I was really more interested in the football kits than the football at that stage. My mother worked in an office that was shared with the Umbro distributors at the time. This would have been around about probably 84, 85 probably, and I kind of ended up kind of spending days after school in there just wandering around the Umbro warehouse and just got an interest in it from that. Didn't really know what I wanted to do, and I kind of fell into retail. So the most obvious progression for me was to be in sports retail. So I went straight into that and started working with football boots and football kits, and was happy as Larry, as they say.
That's. I mean, that element's interesting because I've heard that so many times just running this podcast. Where what first got you interested? All right, well, I got a piece of paper and I was drawing football kits, and we also hear that comment that we're more into football kits than we're into football. So I think for me and people I talk to now, that's the way it started and that's how it's ended as well. So we watch less football now, but we're still interested in the kit design as we get older. So there was a period where we didn't care about kits. We were massively into the football. And then that went away, probably where we stopped, where we realised we weren't going to become professional footballers. And then we said, oh, no, the kit's what it's really about. You don't want to play football, no.
Exactly, yeah. No, I just want to look the part. It was like, one of the biggest encouragements that I got was I got a very encouraging letter back from Mr. G. Scott, who was the sales manager. I got a very encouraging letter back, praising my designs, and they gave me a free football kit. And hang on, I'm a paid designer. So that was the famous Scotland kit with the hoop on the shorts or the band on the shorts, and that was me then. I just kept designing football kits, and so that's pretty much how I got into it.
So if you still got that kit now?
I still have the shorts and socks. I don't know, it was a massive cull in my collection when I moved out of my house, out of my mum and dad's house, when I got married and moved into my own house, and I left all my most prized shorts in the attic, including the Liverpool 1978, the shorts and socks of that Scotland kit, and a few other shorts that I kind of tend to salivate over now when I see them online. And I went back one day to get them, but 2 years later, and what do you talk about? No, we cleared out the attic. So that was one of my most devastating moments in life. But anyway,
it's all about those shorts.
Quickly on from that.
I noticed the other day, just on that subject, a goalkeeper from Hibernian in the sort of mid-80s, he actually had a goalkeeper kit which had, I think they were silver shorts, and they had the purple hoop on them. I'd never seen that before. I saw it the other day.
No, that's right, because that kit generally was all silver. Even the socks were silver. And like in those days, that was, that was pretty cutting edge, like getting silver into a dye to be able to kind of put it onto a kit and to use it for the goalkeeper's kit. So I'd never seen the shorts or talking about it. That's an interesting one. I've never seen those.
Yeah, I'll send you a picture of those later. okay, so then, so you left school, you get into So what area of the industry did you get into then?
I decided to that okay, I'd done a few other bits and pieces first, and I decided, look, you know, I'm better off working in a shop, in a sports shop, because that's really all there was at the time. You know, I was 16, 17 at this stage, a manufacturer or a supplier, so, because I didn't drive. So I went into AF Burns, which was in Capel Street here in Dublin, so some of your listeners may remember that. And it was mainly a shoe and sports shop. And I learned quite a lot about football boots from working there. And then I went on to various other places and ended up in Champion Sports in 92 when they opened up. The brand is still there, but it's a different company running it. But the best job I ever had was go wear a buyer for Champion from 95. And that was literally just looking at brand new football kits and deciding which ones I wanted to put in the shops. And they paid me for it. It was like, you're paying me for this? Okay, cool. So, you know, there's an awful lot of interesting stuff. We, you know, we brought Juventus shirts in from a company called Ard Blair in Scotland, who were the agents for Kappa. And this guy's a guy working out of a shed in Juventus shirts throughout the UK and Ireland. And when I think of it now, when you look at it now, you know, if you're a retailer trying to hoops, you have to jump through with Adidas and with everybody else. And I just think back to those times and think this for me was the golden era of football kits. It was literally in a shed somewhere in Scotland. You know, had the agency for Kappa. I remember the first order I placed with them was for 24 Juventus shirts, and you know, sold them quite well. But it's just something I always think back to when I, you know, when I see a new kit launch, I think, geez, I wonder what lad that used to run our players up to these days, because that's you know, it was just like, little did they know how big this thing was going to become in those days. It was beginning to get bigger, you know, around about this period. But it was just, you know, we had Juventus, we had Barcelona, Middlesbrough as well, of course, because, you know, they moved to Area at that stage, and you had them too, bizarrely. But he just had the Middlesbrough kits. He didn't have the Area brand or anything. He just happened to have Middlesbrough kits, so he bought some off. But yeah, so, I mean, that was, you know, the retail. Then, like, all good things that come to an end. Then I ended up having to get a proper job for a while, which was just having to do a proper job in telecoms. although I do actually credit myself a little bit with the sponsorship of the Aircom League of Ireland. When we rebranded as a Telecom Air and rebranded to Aircom, and I pestered and hassled the marketing guys, you know, really get the brand out there, just really get into the League of Ireland, that's the way to go, sponsor the Irish team, take over from Opel, do all that. It's great. But yeah. So, and you know, in fairness, once the court order and the injunction kind of ran out, I was back down again to thank them for doing it. So, you know, but it wasn't football. Let's face it.
Yeah, it's, you know, the thing with Aircom is, because obviously League of Ireland, there's the tie in there, but also with the national team, they're more synonymous than you would usually have with an association sponsor, because the logo appears on the front of the shirts, doesn't it? Which is it's a strange thing. As it's come about, obviously it's more recent. It was Opel in the 90s back then, but it's been Aircom more recently than that. And is it three now, I think, isn't it?
It's three now, that's correct, yeah. But it was Opel were the first to do that. There's a guy called Aaron O'Byrne, who was the marketing manager for Opel. He apparently we demand to really get the definitive on this, but apparently he was the man who insisted that all the shirts had the Opel logo on them. It had never been done before. It certainly hadn't been done mainstream international teams replica kits before. And apparently he was the guy that said to them, yeah, we'll do this deal, yeah, we'll give you this money, but, you know, we want our logo on the front. And ever since that day, that's just, you know, every FAI deal that they do with a commercial sponsor seems to have that built into it, that the replica shirts will all have the brand on it. It's reasonably unique.
Yeah, it's not particularly popular. I mean, a lot of Irish fans will complain about it being on the throne. Something I noticed recently, which is, I suppose, an instance of life imitating art. Someone put an Ireland kit on our website probably a few years ago, 5 or 6 years ago. And instead of having the Aircom logo on the front, it was on the lower back. So that's sort of a compromise. So it would still be on the shirt, but it wouldn't sort of arguably ruin the shirt at the front by having it there, and obviously not what the players wear. But I've noticed Barcelona are doing that next season, or certainly up until the point they're going to be retailing the shirts like that, up until the point at which they get a new sponsor, and they're just having the UNICEF logo on the lower back, and they've got nothing on the front for next season as things stand. I think that'll probably change, but the shirts are available without a front sponsor. So it was just something I noticed recently.
That's right. Yeah, I think they'll probably have Bico on the left sleeve as well. You know, it's a scenario where Barcelona are holding out for more money from a different sponsor. And, you know, as we all know, these things 9 months a year in advance in terms of replica generation, etc. So it looks like they've made the decision to go with an unsponsored shirt, certainly for replicas for the entire season. And if they do decide to put something on the front of the shirt, then it'll be fairly unique to the players. But it looks for this season anyway.
Yeah. I mean, I've looked at that shirt and I don't know. I want to really like it, but it's the whole new Nike Vapor thing, and I'm struggling with it. It's meant to look like the 92 shirt, and I'm not sure the one that they won the. Well, they didn't play it. They played in an orange shirt in the final.
But
it was the first season that they won the European Cup, and that was it's sort of a nod back to that 25 years, I suppose, isn't it? Is that right? That seems a long time, but I suppose it is.
Gotcha. I remember it like yesterday, Ronald Koeman. Yeah. Oh, anyway, yeah, look, don't get me started on this year's Nike kits. We need an entire other podcast for that. I don't know if we're going to talk about it later on, but the Nike kits for this year, it screams one word: conform. That's what it screams. Never mind, your club looks like this, it's conform. We have decided this is what you will look like, now conform.
Yeah, it's it could be construed as a sorry state of affairs, but I mean, as Nike will say, if you want the players to play to their optimum level, then you're going to need a kit that looks exactly like this. So
absolute bunkum. And we should talk about this later on as well, about how the early days of all this sort of stuff got debunked by Milan Union Polytechnic. But anyway, sorry, go on, we'll keep going. So that's pretty much how I got into it, and that's, you know, pretty much how I ended up in 2003. I was working in the same job I'm in now. I started a sportswear company, a sportswear distribution company, and we distributed Cellsport goalkeeper's gloves for Ireland. We distributed a brand called TFG. Don't know if you remember them. Later became Super League, which became TFG, I think, the other way around. They used to do quite a lower league teams, quite a few Scottish teams, all cut and sew stuff, a lot of it manufactured in Scotland, just outside Glasgow. So we did a bit with them. And then we were lucky enough to land the deal with Diadora. Theodore more or less took over our company, and, you know, we became just the Irish agency, if you like, or the Irish distributor for Theodore. And that's where the fun really began.
Okay, so this was the same company. So you were distributor for TFG and Cellsport, and then that progressed on to being a distributor for Theodore. Is that right?
Yeah, we kind of got Theodore UK company. Didn't make sense for them to have a separate company, if you like. It was apparently an accounting thing. They will do all of this, you just go out and do the sponsorship. So I took over for Ireland, did a small bit in the UK, just really consulting with when they had West Brom, which, even though it was a sponsorship, West Brom actually manufactured the kits themselves, put the Diadora logo on it, so did a little bit on that. And obviously did an awful lot here in Ireland, both League of Ireland, Irish League, and the GAA as well. So unfortunately, it came to a sticky end, but we met Waterford United for the first time on the 15th of Feb, and we had the deal done, all kits delivered, ready to go for the first arch. So we were delighted about that. And that was the first team that we ever actually did a deal with.
Yeah. Sorry, just go back to something you said a second ago. When you mentioned cut and sew, what do you mean by that?
Okay, well, you'll understand that a lot of shirts, particularly going back to, you know, the late 90s, early noughties, would be, you'd have kind of a batch of material with the design of the shirt in it. So if it's a red and black striped shirt, the companies would buy reams of material in red and black, and then they would cut the shirt to a pattern, like a tailored shirt that you might buy in Oxford Street, but you know, not the same quality, obviously. And it was very good for wear, and it looked well, which is when we started getting panels. We'd get mesh panels, we'd get nylon panels, we'd get other bits and pieces to put technology into. Quite expensive way of manufacturing football shirts. They look well. They're also quite limited in what you can do. So, for example, if you wear pink and blue stripes, you're not going to be getting a cut and sew short unless you're looking at probably 10,000 pieces. So that's what this company in Scotland used to do. They used to manufacture all the shirts through cut and sew. So they'd buy material, they'd design the shirt, they'd be all fairly plain designs. For example, they had a Plymouth Argyle shirt that was bottle green and had a white panel insert down the side by the bottle green material. They'd buy the white material, they'd form the pattern, and then cut and sew, literally stitch the white panel to the green panel on one side, and then do the same on the other side. And they'd manufacture the shirt that way and then attach a collar to it. Mm-hmm. After our cuffs, they'd attach cuffs to it. So, don't know whether they still use the same process for cut and sew shirts now, but that's the way they used to do it. That's the way it was originally done. You'd have a template for each size. And when we talk about template kits, obviously, you know, this is where it comes from. You have literally this kind of template, as in a piece of wood that you put down, cut the cloth around it, and that would be your size medium. And then you'd have a front and a back and sleeves, and you'd stitch them all together, and that's your shirt.
Okay. Interesting. So, yeah, it's interesting where you come from that. And obviously, the top of the range shirts like Adidas and Nike are doing things in a way which borrows from that. But I suppose the cut and sew elements are still part of that.
Yeah, I mean, at the moment, I'm sitting here in a Hamburg shirt from 2014. Okay, so I'm just looking at this while it's on me. It is a cut and sew shirt. There's a lot of technology in it. You have, but I'm looking at seams. You have a seam where the three stripes ends and the sleeve kind of starts. You have a mesh seam under the arms, which goes right down the side. You have the collar stitched onto it. There's an awful lot of seams. This is a replica version of the shirt I'm wearing. The shirt the players would have worn would have been a seamless version. It would have been either a tech fit or 2040, yeah, probably a tech fit shirt. So there'd be zero seam. It's the way to put it is constructed as one piece, and it's quite expensive and it's quite time consuming to get that right and to put all the technology into it, which is why when you see a player's shirt retailing for £120, you know, that's the reason for it. You see a replica shirt, which would be mainly cut and sew with embroidered badges and, you know, a printed logo. But the reason why the player's version is more expensive is it's a lot more time consuming, a lot more technology, and, you know, it's probably a much better quality garment as well. So yeah. Even before you had any compression technology they put into it, you know, it would still be kind of a much more difficult process to make that shirt than your standard, which is, you know, mass produced at factories wherever.
Okay. All right. So we've suddenly jumped to the present there, so we won't worry too much about that. Go back to what was going on with Diadora in particular. So you started supplying kits for teams in the League of Ireland, is that right? So Waterford United, yeah. You mentioned.
Yeah. That same season, the following season then we'd had Dundalk, Monaghan United, brought in a couple of others as well. And the process for those was a lot longer, which gave us more time. But what we found was happening was when we'd order, for example, a stock shirt for a team. Okay, I'll give you an example. Portadown. We had them for the 2004-05 season because obviously they're still a winter season in the north. So we had Portadown. We chose a stock shirt, which was, you know, a team wear shirt, basically. It had these little dots on the side, which, you know, were supposed to heat, you know, change color as it heated up. It had compression technology. It was kind of a one piece. It was a fantastic shirt. Players liked it. Supporters hated it. The reason they hated it was because it was so tight fitting. It didn't matter what size you got. It just, you know, it just clung to you, which was the idea for a player shirt, but for a supporter, not so much. And obviously, we weren't going to produce different versions of this shirt, given that you're probably looking at quantities of 400 or 500, so it just wouldn't be economical. But we'd earmarked this shirt for Portadown. They were playing in the UEFA Cup or the Europa League, whatever it was at the time. And we placed an order for shirts for the players, which we had to bring into the country and get branded up here. So we'd operate with that is, we'd order the shirts, they'd come into us blank. We'd use the approved crest, whatever sponsors' logos, whatever name and number font they wanted, and we'd get that done in-house here in Ireland. Before they were due to go for their Europa League tie, we got the players' shirts in and we branded them up. When everything was fine, made sure. One policy I had was every club we had three different colour shirts, home, away, and third. And if the third kit is never made available commercially, if you like, we had a pre-order system for the home kit. We had 180, that number, 180 pre-order shirts, which were the same shirt, basically just without the names and numbers. Rang up to find out what was happening with my shirts, only to be informed that, well, we don't have them. I said, well, hang on, I booked them on the system. Like, where are they? The Maltese FA have taken them. I just sat there, what? Get a deal at the Maltese FA, they need them. Oh, but. And you can imagine the fun and games I had trying to explain that. It's like, you know, this was the start of the Morecure side, the side that, you know, as a football supporter or a football kit supporter, you never really want to see, but unfortunately, it's out there. So this was the start of it.
Yeah, it's a big shame when things like that happen, because I look at I think we put the football kit world on a pedestal, and we don't imagine that. I mean, we've all done different jobs and worked at different offices, and we know how inept the industries could be, if not just companies, but industries. You seem to think that sometimes you slip into the feeling that the football kit industry will be a different case. And I've heard some horrendous stories and stories that I couldn't even say on here because it would get me into such trouble. I mean, trouble, I can't even mention what sort of trouble it would get me into there because it's so serious. Some of the things that go on are just staggering, but that's kind of life, isn't it? That's business, and these things will happen, and you just need to make do as best you can when these situations come up, I suppose. But it's good for your next interview when you go for a next job. Give me an example of a situation when things went wrong and you had to sort them at short notice, I suppose.
Yeah, it was... well, what we did in that situation was we contacted UEFA. We asked them if we could use, you know, if Portadown would be allowed playing their away kit, you know, could we put them in white? Because I think the team they're playing were playing in yellow and green. And yes, the other club agreed, Portadown agreed. So what we did was we were able to get our hands on the white version of that kit. So that's what we did. We swapped it over for, you know, anyone who'd ordered a replica shirt. We told them, oh, low kit in the first game. Do you want that one instead? So yeah, anyway, I'm going straight to hell, but people were happy in the end. And so I suppose it got us out of a hole, but it's not something I'd ever like to have to repeat ever. Mm-hmm. It was a hairy week, let me tell you. But anyway.
Yeah, so, I mean, you were obviously based in Ireland, but mm-hmm. you were dealing with other Diadora clubs around. I mean, were you dealing with teams in Scotland, for example?
No, we dealt with the Scottish FA on some things.
Right.
Funnily enough, at that time, Diadora only had one Scottish club, if I remember correctly, was Elgin City, I think. And they wore a team wear shirt called the Bomber Black and White Stripes. Opened a correction on that one, but I think that was the situation. There was only actually one club side, even though they had the national deal. So, you know, the only reason they had Elgin, I believe, was the agent for Scotland had some sort of in there and was asked, look, we're struggling for a kid supplier, you're the national team supplier, any chance you'd help us out? And I think they just did it, just, you know, it was small, it wasn't going to cost them much, they just said, look, yeah, we'll do it, you know, and that's what it was. So they had a policy at that stage that they weren't going to get involved with clubs. They did go for Celtic. I know they had Rangers, sorry, I know I'm digressing here. The Diadora brand was on the Rangers kit at the time, but it wasn't Diadora. It was manufactured by TFG. So, yeah, okay. So the way that worked was Rangers paid Diadora a royalty to use the brand name, but they had complete control over everything, like complete. You could not buy a Rangers shirt unless you bought it from Rangers retail or from Rangers wholesale. They designed the shirt, they sourced the manufacturer, they did absolutely everything, they did it really well. Some fantastic kits, but you know, if you look at Diadora kits at the time, look at Rangers kits at the time, it was always unique when they had the Diadora logo on it. So I don't really you know, people are sitting there listening to that Pretty Range. Hey, what's he talking about? We had Deodora. Yeah, yeah, the Deodora brand, but, you know, we weren't involved in it. Would have loved to have been, but, you know, it's done. You know, we got money and publicity, but they looked after absolutely everything else and did it really well, in my view. But sure.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it means we can't blame Deodora for the orange away shirt then.
No, we can't blame Deodora for that one. That was certainly, I sat down with the head designer. It was a fantastic designer. She was excellent. And, you know, they'd sent the CADs through and she was sitting there and I swear to God, there was a tear in her eye. And she said, I think I did this. we're still a Scotland kid. The Scotland's kid is good, isn't it? Yeah, it is great, but no, I mean it wasn't great. But some of the kids, like the home kids, I thought were good. I thought they kind of really did a good job on that. And away kids are away kids, you know, they're generally going to be nasty anyway. But sure, another story.
It's a great shirt. I think that's a fantastic shirt. I think the design was great for the time, and I think it stands a test of time now as well. So if you look back on it, it's a good shirt. But it's a bold move to send Rangers on the pitch in a bright orange shirt, I think.
There's connotations, I suppose, yeah.
So you say that you dealt with the Scottish FA. Is that something that you did personally then?
Okay, so there's a number of aspects to this, if you like. There was the lad that looked after, who had the, you know, who was the account manager for the Scottish FA, was a lad called Bobby Brown. And he would fill 20 of your podcasts. He worked for Umbro when they had Liverpool in the 70s and 80s. He's been in the business donkeys here, but he was kind of at Deodora, and I think it was kind of through him that Deodora got the Scottish FA deal. We would have worked closely with Bobby because initially he was brought in, if you like, you know, to us to act as a sounding board. If you can imagine, we're these guys who are enthusiastic, who know the Irish business but don't know the international business. And one of the things he asked us to do was, he went on holidays and he said, listen, we have a meeting scheduled to the SFA. Would you like to go along to it instead? And I went, yeah, love to. But ended up designing, talking about the designs for the upcoming new kit. And, you know, we're across at Michael, who's the lad that worked with me. And we ended up convincing them that gold would be a really good colour to have on their shirt. And went back to the designer and she came up with the navy blue shirt with all the gold trimmings. And Scotland have had some fantastic kits, but it's up there, I think, in my opinion. And where we got the gold from was Scotland were saying, well, you know, our colours are navy, white and red. They're our colours. We don't want to deviate. You know, gold is a rich colour. It enhances pretty much anything. But you put gold and navy together in the right tone and the right way, it's going to look striking on the pitch. It's going to be something that will stand out. It's going to be something that people will remember.
Okay, also, you would have dealt with a lot of players individually as well. Is that right?
Absolutely, yeah. At one point, between the Irish League and the League of Ireland, which, you know, we were directly responsible for those two leagues, we had something like 45 players on our books. And you know, the idea was we didn't give any of them any cash. We gave them 3 or 4 pairs of boots a year. And in return for that, we got to use their image. But also in return for that, we got first refusal if they moved to England or Scotland. One player was Kevin Doyle when he was at Cork City. And Kevin was a fantastic lad. He really was. He could not do enough for us. We gave him, I think, 3 pairs of boots when he was at Cork City. And he'd be on the phone to us. He'd be saying, oh, boots are great. They're fantastic. He'd be giving us sales leads. You know, like, I mean, now this is a footballer who's down there, you know, banging in goals for Cork City on the cusp of a move to Reading. And he's actually on the phone to us saying, listen, there's a club down here looking for a set of kit. I've told them, can I give them your number? Like, you know, will you talk to them? And, you know, he'd tell anyone that listened about how great Deodora boots were. And I remember saying to him, I said, Kevin, you know, I really appreciate this. I said, you know, it's fantastic, but, you know, you're going above and beyond here. And he says, oh, no, I really like the boots. And to be fair, he gave me free boots. No one's ever given me free boots before. I'm going, okay, fair enough. So the day came and Kevin transferred to Reading and he rang me up and he said, hey, did you hear the news? And I said, I did. I said, I'm delighted for you. It's fantastic. He said, oh, yeah. I said, can't wait. He said, listen, the club were on to me. They want me to wear Puma boots because we're sponsored by Puma. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, okay, well, it's up to yourself. I said, Kevin, in fairness, you don't actually have a contract with us. You know, it's up to you if you want to do that. We'd love you to stick with Deodora. And he goes, oh, no, I want to stay with Deodora. I love the boots. You know, you've really looked after me. It's been great. And I said, fantastic, right? So got on to the head of Theodora UK and I said, Kevin Doyle's just signed for Reading. You know, I think he was put into the Ireland squad about 3 days after that, after the signature had been announced. And I said, he's going to be an Irish international. He's going to be a really good player. I said, he's a good lad as well. I said, let's look after him. Let's just give him the basic pro deal, which is as many boots as you can eat, you know, and as much kind of leisure wear as you're allowed to wear type of thing. Yeah, we'll do that. And so, you know, passed on contact details. And a week later, Kevin rings me. He says, did you talk to anyone in the UK about my boots? I said, yeah, I passed it on. I said, you know, what's the story? And he goes, well, no one's contacted me. So I said, fine. Got on the blower again. I said, listen, Kevin's been on to me. Do you want me just to send them over boots? Just keep them going for now until you guys get sorted. No, you can't do that. Your allocation is only for Ireland. No, we'll take it out of our allocation. It's fine. We'll do it now. And so they would have had his boot choices. He had a boot preference. It was the Totti boot he used to wear, the kind of white and red one. And, you know, it would have had his size, etc. Just off-the-shelf boots. Nothing, you know, just nothing to it. Literally, pull them off the shelf, put them in a box, send them down to wherever he's staying. Thanks very much, job done. And they didn't do it. And Kevin rang me the following week and he said, look, he said, I've no Diodora boots to wear. I've been wearing Puma boots in training. You know, the club are pressuring me to sign up with Puma. What'll I do? I'll have to tell them to come sign up with Puma. And, I got on, you know, I sent, shall we say, a strongly worded email to Theodore in Italy and told him, look, mark my words, this guy is going to be, you know, a top-notch international. He will play in the Premier League regularly. He will score goals. We could have had him for six pairs of boots. He's gone to Puma and we won't get him back. And they kind of shrugged their shoulders. And well, look, as regards him, the rest is history.
Yeah, it's a pity. And so the rest of his career, is he still playing now or is he retired now?
Yeah, he's playing in the US. Who's he playing for? Salt Lake, I think. Is it Salt Lake? I'm not sure. He's still playing, all right, yeah. He's still playing, yeah. But he wore Puma for quite a while after that. I don't know. I lost interest in it then, obviously, when I moved away from that side of it. But yeah, he did wear Puma for the next while anyway, certainly, because obviously they were looking after him.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was a weird one.
Now, when I think of footballers that wore Diodora, there's one that springs to mind immediately, which is Roy Keane. And obviously an Irish, quite a famous Irish international player as well. Did you ever have any sort of dealings with him?
I did. I met him once and I met him at a Diodora sales meeting. And unbeknownst to us at the time, and this will give you a measure of how professional the guy is, this was either the same day or the day after he'd been shown the door at Manchester United. And he came in and he was, you know, couldn't have been nicer. He obviously spent a bit of time talking to me and my colleague who were over from Ireland. He asked us what boots we thought he should wear, what boots would go well in the Irish market, how could he help what we were doing. He talked a little bit about, you know, he was evasive about Manchester United, I will say that, but at no point did he give the impression that he was unhappy. At no point did he give the impression that something, you know, terrible had happened to him. And imagine how terrible that must have been from to be told by the club that he loved that, you know, well, he can leave, good luck. He kind of sat in the meeting with us and we discussed different sales strategies. He came up with a few decent ideas himself. Then it came to his boots for the following season, and Diodora were looking at a black, white and red version of the Ativa. The Ativa boot was his boot, which was black with a kind of fluorescent yellow stripe. Came in a few different colours in the end, but the one he wore was always that, the Ativa.
Yeah.
And he sat there and kind of said, I don't think we should do that colourway. And everyone kind of looked at him and said, no. And it was the only time during the meeting where he kind of looked at him and said, oh, interesting. What's that about? He said, no, I think go with something more neutral or do a few different colourways. But certainly do white and green anyway. White and green would be a great one to do. And we're sitting there going, okay, so we did, his boots were going to be white and green, you know, a couple of weeks later he signed for Celtic. He was an absolute gentleman, I have to say. He was, you know, he was going into a business meeting, he was going into a company that were probably paying him a few quid, but, you know, on the day or the day after what happened to him, to come in and to be as professional as he was. I mean, I'd always had a lot of respect for him as a footballer, but I'd never met him, so, you know, couldn't comment what he's like as a person. But that's the one time I actually met him, and I have to say I was impressed. Mm. You know, you look back now, you know, knowing what we know now, you know, at that meeting, you kind of go, how did he hold it together? A lot of people just wouldn't have bothered. Oh, no, I can't come in. I'm sick. I'm injured. I have to do something else. But no, he didn't. He came in, did what he had to do, and, you know, off he went. But,
I mean, in general there must have been loyalty towards Deodoro anyway, because Deodoro were a major player in the boot industry at the time, but I'm sure he must have been able to get bigger contracts from, say, a Nike or a Puma or an Adidas around that time. Would that be fair?
I'd say you're absolutely correct, but one of the legends that used to go around the Deodoro office said that Roy had an inane dislike of Adidas and Nike. He just did not like them. He wore high-tech before Deodoro. He liked smaller brands. He liked the idea of being the big fish. You know, he's actually making a difference to that brand. So I think, yes, it would be fair to say that he probably could have named his price with Nike or Adidas or Puma or any of the others at that stage. But I think he felt himself that he would be better looked after. All it was for him was he just needed the tools of his trade, which were his boots. He wasn't interested in anything fancy. He just wanted to know that the boots he's going to wear were reliable and suited him. And obviously they were handmade for him as well. But he would have got that pretty much anywhere. Mm. I think, you know, to be fair to him, I think he was loyal to the Deodoro brand because they looked after him. You know, he was one person that was absolutely 100% looked after very well. So, he was a great ambassador. We actually used him to get into the GAA. But anyway, that's another story.
Oh, okay. So, I mean, I wouldn't think of Deodoro as having ties with the GAA, but Roy Keane actually acted as a go-between there. That's a strange story.
So, they'd never done a deal with an actual contract, you know, where there's a signed contract with a foreign brand before. It just wasn't, you know, in terms of sportswear. They had a nod and a wink with Adidas at one stage in terms of, you know, the Adidas rep would turn up and give referees boots or give players boots or whatever. The deal we actually did, and it was on the back of, they liked the idea that there was a Roy Keane link to it, was that we would supply the referees with boots for the championship season. All referees and linesman would wear, you know, and in return we'd be the official boot partner of the GAA. The second element of that then was they have this international rules series where they play Australia. It seems to be a mixture between Gaelic football, Australian rules, street fighting. They said to us, look, you know, none of these guys, you know, have boots. They have boots, but they buy them themselves, or the club buys them, or the county buys them. So we agreed to sponsor each and every player with boots on that tour. Because at the time, the tour was in Australia. Deodoro were huge in Australia. Green collateral over there. Everyone's a winner. And then the boots didn't arrive. Mm. Yeah, I know. So the boots arrived for the referees. Then come the end of September, guys were traveling down under. And, we had the orders in, we knew what boots people wanted, what with the furious kind of email trail between myself, Deodoro Italy and Deodoro Australia to see if they could source boots. We all looked like dopes, and it was just another thing that went wrong that shouldn't have gone wrong. So yeah, huge opportunity lost, because you can imagine being the official boot supplier. Puma kind of had a deal with them with the GPA, you know, the Gaelic Players Association, which is kind of like the PFAI, that any player that, you know, was stuck for boots, Puma would give them boots type of thing. But as I say, that was, you know, with the Gaelic Players Association, wasn't with the actual GAA itself. So it didn't extend beyond inter-county players. But yeah, huge opportunity lost, and something I kind of still scratch my head about this, you know, to this day. You're talking 30 pairs of boots, they couldn't deliver them. It's just, you know, I don't know. Anyway, yeah, so that's that was the GAA and Deodoro and Roy Keane.
So it was around this sort of time, I'm thinking then, that I don't know whether this contributed to it or not, but you decided to move from what we could see as the dark side of being sort of the money side of things, of supplying, to then coming into the club side, so being on the game side of it. And you, where was it you went then? Was it UCD was it? What is that? University College Dublin, is it?
That's correct. Yeah, I went to UCD, who were the Premier Division at the time. Team made up of a mixture of students and journeymen. So a lot of the players would have been students at the college on a soccer scholarship. Then the more experienced heads would have been journeymen coming towards the end of their career, but, you know, wanted to be able to kind of still play at a high level and like the idea of helping to bring kids on, or wanted to get into coaching. So it was a good mix of players that were there, really good group of players, really good management and staff. The only problem was that the people didn't come out and watch them. So this is going to be part of my job to try and get people to actually come out and watch the team. So,
okay. So what was your role there?
So the reason they're delineated was the FAI paid half my wages and the club paid the other half. So I was there full time working on various different projects. One of which obviously was, you know, trying to maximize the sponsors, if you like, exposure, in terms of how, you know, how we can kind of use the kit to get them exposed, how we can, you know, how we can get people to kind of actually think about the brands that are supporting the club, all that kind of stuff. So, to answer, I suppose, the original question is that, you know, did that kind of thing regarding the boots not turning up for the GAA under 20 players? Yeah, it was all that. If you multiply that by 20, then that's, you know, the straw that broke the camel back was we did a deal with Bohemians, a famous old club in Dublin. We designed absolutely cracking kits for them, delivered them on time, which was amazing. And then the replicas were just delayed and missed the Christmas market. That's when I ended up going to UCD. You know, famously, Theodore did a kit for Crystal Palace and the first batch, I don't know if you remember this or not, had Crystal, C-H-R-Y-S-T-A-L. And I can remember the head of production happened to be in the office that day in Manchester. Head of production walking into the office, slapping a shirt down the table and shouting at the top of his voice, "Tell me what's wrong with this shirt." And we all looked, and it took us a while to twig. He said, "Since when is there a H in Crystal?" And it was like, literally, you had eight people sitting around their head in their hands. And the head guy goes, "So that's a sample though, right?" No, this is the first batch of replicas.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay, so anyway, yeah. So it was stuff like that kind of thing that would happen that would just, it would be soul destroying.
Yeah, so then you're in sort of the firing line of when things go wrong then, aren't you? Because then you're on the other side. Were you dealing with the manufacturers yourself then? Were you dealing with someone the equivalent of your position then?
Yeah, I was, but we were dealing with O'Neill's, who... On the design side, nobody could ever accuse them at that point of being cutting edge.
Right.
But what you got was what you got. And if they said they're going to have it at a particular time, if they said it was going to be this design, it was this design. If you asked them for something in particular, they got it for you. So that was how I got to see how it should have been done. And, you know, O'Neill's been much maligned over here by, I suppose, you know, pub teams, we ordered the stuff, didn't turn up, it's taken 6 weeks, it's taken this, it's taken that. Huge sign in their offices in Walkinstown. Failure to order on time is not our problem. That's what it says. It's just so out there. You know, you must order by the given deadline. If you order by the given deadline, we will deliver it. To be fair to them, they were fantastic. And if I asked them to do something, they just did it. And even down to, we're sponsored by Budweiser. And you can't, obviously, you know, the club being sponsored by Budweiser, you know, the link there is obvious. Students, booze, happy days. But it was kind of come more into a time of, well, can't really be seen to encourage young people to be, you know, Budweiser were getting very edgy. It was the longest running sponsorship in Irish football at that time. I think it was since they'd entered the league in 87. So it was probably going 84, maybe it was 84. In around, so look, 20 odd years at that stage anyway, it was gone. But, you know, the days were numbered, as they put it themselves. You know, the days are numbered of us being able to do this. It's going to come a time when it's going to be banned. Now, it hasn't been banned yet, but that was their thinking at the time. Yeah. So, you know, it said, well, look, okay, we sell kids replica shirts. We're not going to put the Budweiser logo on them. We're not going to do that. I said, how about, you know, we were doing this thing with Show Races and the Red Card. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that. Maybe you're, you know, listeners might be, but they're you know, they're a multicultural organization that promote, you know, every people from every culture, every color, every creed being involved in football, which is the way it should be. Football is football. It's, you know, leave your religion and all that other rubbish outside. And I approached them and said, look, you know, we did this team poster, which was show race and red card, and, you know, all the players sitting there with red cards, etc. And I said to them, look, you know, how about we put your logo on the front of our shirts when we're playing at home for four games in the middle of the summer? And they were delighted. They said, yeah, this would be fantastic. Yeah, you know, why not? And I'd already approached Budweiser, and they were delighted with the idea because they wanted to be seen to be the kind of brand that will go, hey, we'll get behind a good cause. It's not all about our brand name. And to be fair, they're well behind it. They're delighted with it. The university were over the moon with it. Show Races and Red Card were quite happy with it. Just left the FAI. So I sent an email to the FAI. Bear in mind, I'm semi-employed by the FAI at this stage. I send an email to my contact in there and say, listen, we have this initiative. We've got the local community involved in it. The Chamber of Commerce are getting involved in it. The Mayor of Dunleary of Dublin, that UCD is based, is on board. We're going to do a huge launch for it. And what we want to do is we're going to do all this just for four games, and then we're going to raffle off the players' shirts and give the money then to multicultural causes in the area. And the guy's team said, that's a fantastic idea. Brilliant. He says, great. Heard nothing. Week later. Are you okay to do that then? There's a problem. I said, well, what do you mean there's a problem? Well, Show Races and Red Card wasn't registered before the start of the season as a sponsor. I said, they're not a sponsor. I said, it's a community initiative. No, I can't. Sorry, you can't do that. I just said, what? I thought I'd seen it all. I thought I'd seen and heard it all. Oh, how wrong I was. But I was like, so let me get this straight. This is your initiative. The FAI did this wonderful initiative to bring Show Races and Red Card on board, and it was great. We're going into schools with it, we're going into clubs with it, we've got the local campuses is on board, everybody's on board with this. Yeah, but you see, if we let you do this, then you're gonna have another club who want to put Billy Bob's Stop and Go on their shirt next week and something else the following week, and you know, it's going to dilute the fact that clubs sell 1 year sponsorships or 2 year sponsorships. I want to, that's the most mental thing I've ever heard in my entire life. But look, that's what we were up against. I have to say, to be fair to the FAI, that was the only time that they really kind of, you know, left me scratching my head. For the rest of my time at UCD, I found them very supportive. I think they've lost their way an awful lot now, but that's another story again. but, you know, at that time, it was interesting. One thing I really loved about UCD was they didn't change their kits every year. They got at least 3 years out of each kit. Each kit design, I mean, obviously, you know, they'd have a different set of kit each year for the players, but the kit design would stay the same for 3 years. And I really like that. But I don't know, it was doomed to failure because 3 miles down the road from where UCD played, you had where Leinster rugby played. And that's, you know, it was a rugby area, so we were kind of on a hide into nothing. We didn't manage to increase the numbers of people coming to games. We did get a lot of awareness out there. We did bring in a bit of commercial revenue, but unfortunately it was never going to be, you know, at the level that we all wanted to be at, which obviously then necessitated me deciding I was going to go and do something else.
Okay, so then after that experience, is that where you returned to, let's call it, the real world again? So we leave football again there, do we?
Yeah, we do. We leave football then. I had a brief stint in Surrey in Waterford, very brief. And he brought me into, you know, as a consultant to have a look at the soccer market, looking at, you know, again, junior clubs and smaller things. And if we want to get into the League of Ireland stuff, we have to give them stuff. And he just couldn't get his head around that. And I said, look, yeah, that's kind of the way it is. That's the way it's gone, you know. And so then I said, look, I'm banging my head off a brick wall here. Like, you know, I'm going to have to go and get a proper job. So I did. And God, it was horrible. But anyway, yeah. So
they did reasonably well in GAA for a while, though, didn't they? I think
they did. They had Waterford, Sligo. Was it Fermanagh? I think they might have had. They did quite well. They still have Waterford GAA, and they still kit out all the referees, all of the GAA referees. So that's, you know, that's something that they do at national level, as well as all the Waterford stuff. They do quite a bit of club stuff, and they did actually go into soccer in a really small way, but it didn't really take off for them. And they've done a bit of rugby, actually, a bit of rugby union. So they're kind of concentrating now, I think, mainly on the club side of the GAA, you know, and that's, to be fair, that's probably where the money is for them. So that's what they're doing.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So, then Alan Goff was appointed manager of Longford Town. And he said, you know what? He said, you'd be a good kit, man. I said, Jesus, Alan, do you think so? He goes, you would, yeah. You know all that rubbish. I went, okay. So he says, yeah, tell you what, come down to Longford with me. I went, okay, cool. So, ended up getting the Longford Town kitman's gig, and that's the next part of it, I suppose.
Yeah, so, I mean, this is a different role again. So, what you did with there, you did with referees, you did with other clubs, is that what happens? Obviously, you're laundering the kits and so on. We spoke to Shaky a couple of weeks ago, and he told us some of the goings-on that happened as a kitman. But how does it work in terms of, because especially with your background of choosing colours, you've had an influence on the Scotland kit. So the look of the kit is important to you. Does that come into what kit your team wears when they're playing away and that kind of thing?
Absolutely. Longford, I have to say, were very traditional. They had a red and black striped shirt, black shorts, black socks, and then yellow shorts, blue socks as the away kit. Same every year. At that time, regardless of, you know, whatever manufacturer, whatever design, they were the colours and that was it. There was reasons for it. And again, you got to respect the club that say, no, these are our colours. This is what we stick to. And here's why we wear them. So it was kind of limited in what I could do. What I found really strange was that the chairman of the committee chose the kit. This is at Longford now. They chose, you know, the manufacturer. They dealt with the manufacturer. So literally, you know, my first day of pre-season training, I went up and, you know, we had training kit that was delivered. It was the bargain basement of kit that was available. But okay, fine. You know what? As a kit man, you work with what you're given. You can't kind of sit there and start moaning about what you've got. You know, you just work with it and that's it. So there was no club crest on anything. And that was a huge bugbear for mine. And I went to the chairman. I said, Jim, look, you know, we're League of Ireland Football Club. You know, when these guys are out, you know, on their way to matches, on their way to training, or out training when they're training, you want people to know we're Longford Town. Let's put the crest on them. I said, you know what? He said, I wanted to, but, you know, the kit supplier wouldn't do it unless we paid them. I just went, what? He goes, yeah, they wanted £6 per badge. Well, now, in fairness, you're looking at probably 300 items. You know, for a club like Longford Town, it's yeah. £1,800 on just training wear. You know, obviously the kits were branded up properly, but on training wear, you know, he said, look, I just couldn't do it. I thought, okay, fair enough. But as I started then, I was new to the whole, you know, setting up a dressing room and you know, kind of listening to what players want. And I didn't really know that element of it. I'd never seen it from that side before. So it was a bit of an eye-opener when the first day, you know, for the first match, you know, we've done a few training sessions, the first League of Ireland match. The captain came over to me and says, just look at the captain's armband. And I showed it to him. No, I don't want that one. I kind of looked at him and went, it's a captain's armband. No, it's the wrong colour. Oh, well, I have six different colours here. Do you want to pick one? And he chose black. I said, you can't have black. Black is a black armband. I said, just pick one of the other colours. And he goes, no, I always wear black. That's it. Okay, so that was fine. Left it to him. Goalkeeper comes up to me then. He says, I can't wear a green shirt. I said, this is on match day. And I'm going, what do you mean you can't wear a green shirt? No, it's bad luck. I said, oh, well, look, there's a yellow one there. Where the yellow one? Yeah, I don't like yellow. I went, right, okay. Well, we've got green or yellow. Take your pick. I'll go with yellow. Will you get me a grey one for next week? And I'm kind of going, I look at this guy going, I've got 20 pairs of socks to get through the season. Like, what do you want from me? Like, you know, but you know, you get used to these kind of things. Then you kind of begin to kind of understand that, well, okay, footballers, even at that level, like to feel special. It's they're like, you know, they're almost like kind of, you got to treat them like they're your girlfriend. You know, you got to treat them like they're special. You got to kind of, you know, let them know that you're thinking about them. So then it would be, you'd get to know that lads like to wear certain kinds of shin guards. So you'd always keep a spare of that kind of shin guard at the bottom of your bag for the inevitable moment when they'd sit there wild-eyed going, lads, has anyone got an Addy shin guard? I don't know where I'm after. Starting to hyperventilate. And then you kind of, you know, whip it out and go, there you go, you're grand. And then it's like, you know, it's almost like kissing it better, you know. But to be honest, I've been very lucky with the footballers that have been involved with them, that they've all been fairly down to earth. There's been no mad kind of requests. There's one lad who used to insist on wearing white undershorts with his black shorts. And I'd said to him each time, I said, look, I know you rolled them up and I know you generally can't see them, but one day a referee is going to spot them and he's going to make you take them off. Nah, he won't. It'll be grand. But 3 weeks after that, we're playing the game. Lads are coming off at halftime. Referee calls me over. Your number seven's wearing white cycling shorts. Can we take them off now? I went, well, are you sure? Yes. He said he's been doing it all season, but I'm just sick of it now. And I went, okay. So I had to go at halftime. Manager's there giving his team talk. I waited until the team talk was over. I went up to him and said, you need to take your shorts off. And he went, what do you mean? The referee spotted them. If you come out second half with them, it's a yellow card. You're already on the yellow. Don't get sent off. And it was like the poor lad, like, it was like he didn't know what to do. He took them off and, like, he says, Jesus, he's walking out of the dressing room, sees the referee, and he says to him, he says, ref, he says, I took my shorts off, but if you get a slap in the eye at my lad, that's going to be your fault. Yes, anyway, lad being a euphemism for, anyway, yeah, so he's going commando for the second half in his shorts, but that's just one of the I suppose the stranger things that's actually happened at Longford. At Lone Town, then, was a different scenario altogether. We went to at Lone Town, who, again, very traditional club. We wear blue and black striped shorts. We wear black shorts and black socks. We wear all white away from home. Okay, that's fine. And for the first season, it was like that. And I didn't get much input into the kits. Main reason I didn't get much input into the kits is because when a team says they wear blue and black stripes and they're wearing team wear and they've done a deal with a company, there's generally only one blue and black stripe shirt they can wear. It's not like they get to pick four or five different designs. It's like, well, that's the one they're getting. So, you know, that's why you wouldn't get a huge say on the actual shirts.
No.
Bizarre, but that's the way it is. Got to pick out all the training wear. So went to the lad and said, look, you know, you want to wear three-quarter bottoms or do you want to wear tracky bottoms? What do you want to wear? So we did all that. And, you know, that worked out okay. But what I found from that season onwards, this was 2012, referees, I think they might have been awarded points every time they pissed the kit man off, because we were playing Longford, of course, it would be Longford, in a League Cup game. And we were at home, so I'd set out the black and blue home kit, knowing that Longford had thrown up in their yellow, blue and blue. And referee calls me into the room and he says, you're going to have to change. I said, well, no, we're at home. He says, hang on, Longford are yellow and blue. Longford have decided, you know, to change with tradition and they're now wearing yellow and blue stripes as their away kit. Still yellow and blue. And he says, well, sure, they're yellow and blue and their alternative is red and black. They both clash with yours. You're going to have to change. So for the first time, God knows how many years, we tugged out in all white at home. And I swear to God, it was like a death in the family. I had old lads coming up to me, Colin, what's going on? Why are we wearing white? We're at home. Did you not tell them? I went, yeah, but that's just the rules. You know, and the rule is if, you know, the away team clash with the home team must change. That's the rule. There's no getting away from it. Like, so that happened to us on four or five occasions that season. And I just said, look, you know what, lads? I'm sick to death of this. Let's go for a lighter blue. So in 2013, we moved from Umbro to Joma. And Joma had two striped shorts in their catalogue, and the one we chose was mainly blue, kind of a light royal blue is probably the best way to describe it, with black stripes. So that kind of solved most of our problems. So we got through the entire season without having to change at home, apart from Longford Town in the League Cup. But yeah, but we won the league that year, so everyone is quite happy. Following year, then we were in the Premier Division. We splashed out and got a third kit.
Oh,
yeah, and again, home kit was black and blue stripes. It was the one that I'm giving out about on. Well, no, actually, the one before I'm giving out about on Twitter at the moment, the fading stripes one. It was kind of the solid version of that. It was really nice. And yeah. Club Bruges wore exactly the same shirt, except we had it first. but just, you know, due to the fact that we're a summer season, we start in March yeah. and they don't start, whatever. So we had that as our home kit. And then we had the white shirt with the kind of the Finland kit that Nike had given Finland their first one, the white with the blue stripes, except we had white with a black stripe, again, team wear. And we went nuts and we got an orange third kit. Oh. And of course, what happened? First home game of the season, the home kits hadn't arrived. We'd played Sligo Rovers away on the Saturday night, and we wore our away kit in that game because we said we'd wear the away kit for that anyway. So yeah. We wore the away kit, and our first game in the Premier Division in I think it was 17 or 18 years against Shamrock Rovers, should have been absolutely fine wearing black and blue stripes against their green and white hoops. And promised that the home kit would turn up on, you know, that week. Didn't materialise. And we ended up wearing orange. And it was like, just people couldn't understand it. Like, they thought we were doing it on purpose. Like, orange? Is this the new kit? What's going on? Like, you know, what's happening? You're trying to explain to people, well, you know, you want to be kind of diplomatic about it at the same time. You don't want to say, Nike screwed us over. You just say, look, you know, there's an issue with the home kit. It's not ready yet. It's not technically released. You know, we're waiting on clearance to wear it. So we ended up playing in orange in our home game. Never won a game in the orange kit, and that's a chant now down at Athlone. So they have an orange away kit again this year for the first time in 3 years. But yeah, we never won a game in that orange kit, so it wasn't very popular.
and so that would have been the first time the side had ever worn orange as well, I take it.
Absolutely, yeah. Up to then it was black blue stripes. They did go nuts 1 year, I think, sometime in the early 90s they wore black, but going back to when they were successful in the 80s, it was actually a really light blue and black stripe they wore. It was fantastic, and I'd love to have been able to recreate it, but again, it's just not something that you find in team wear. So mm-hmm. It was kind of a really light blue with black stripes and Fiat trucks on the front of it, and it was made by O'Neill's, and it's one of my favourite kits. I would have loved to have been able to reproduce it. And I did suggest that we talk to O'Neill's and see if we can go back with them. And there was lots of shuffling of feet and murmuring towards the table, you know, that there was an incident we can never go back. You know, okay, right, fair enough. So, but but yeah, so we ended up kind of, you know, in standard team wear. So it was the first time that the club had ever worn orange. And when we were deciding on the colour for the third kit, it was the secretary that came up with it. He said, "Why don't we go with orange?" I went, "Orange is a bit mad. Yeah, let's go with orange." And of course, what I did was checked all the other clothes, made sure that nobody else wore orange. So I said, it won't clash with anything. It's great. Let's have that for our third kit. We'll use it as a cup jersey as well. Of course, got knocked out of the cup in the first round. But, you know, but anyway, then, of course, when you go to an away game in particular, you're dealing with the vagaries of different clubs and what they let you do and what they don't let you do. I won't mention the club, but who wear a particular colour kit. And it clashed with our kit, so we turned up. We set up in white. I walked into the other team's dressing room. They're set up in their home kit as well, so we're okay. 15 minutes before the kits are due to be assessed by the referee, which is an hour before kickoff, I'm walking past their dressing room, and I see they've got a white shirt hanging up. I said to their kit man, "What's the story with white?" And he goes, "Just decided to wear it tonight." Okay, fair enough. So, luckily enough, I'd bring all three kits with us. So I had the home kit, hung the home kit up, and brought the home kit into the referee. And the referee looks at me and goes, no, you can't wear your home kit. They're wearing their home kit. I said, no, they've decided to wear white. Oh, no, they haven't. Walked in to the dressing room, said to your man, "What's the story?" I changed my mind again. We're going with the home kit. Mm-hmm. And funnily enough, I'd been warned about this particular club by, you know, somebody else who'd said, "Look, you know, these guys will just mess with you. They'll just mess with you," thinking that you may not have the other kit with you. Because actually, there's a story of you. In 2007, yes, 2006-2007, Bohemians had four different kits. We made sure they were given four kits. And the reason for that was their home kit, red and black stripes, black shorts, black socks, away kit, white shirt with blue sleeves, white shorts, white socks. We knew that certain grounds where teams wore blue, the floodlights weren't great, and sometimes referee asked, you know, the away team wearing a dark colour to change as well. We also knew that white with blue sleeves wouldn't fly, so we gave them a yellow shirt. And we also gave them a blue and black striped shirt for reasons that we had them. That was it. But the point is, they had four different kids. They turned up to play Waterford United, who were also Deodora, who had three kids. Between the two teams, they had seven kids. Right? And the game was delayed by 45 minutes while they tried to decide who was going to wear what kit. The referee had told Bohemians, you can't wear the home kit, it's too close to the, you know, it's too dark, same as the Waterford kit. Wear your away kit. They brought out the white and blue kit. No, it's got blue sleeves. So the rule then is the home team should change. The home team brought out their white away kit and said, we're not wearing that. So I was kind of, when I hear this, I said, okay, at what point did Bose say they'd wear the yellow kit? They didn't bring it. They brought the two kits and that was it. I kind of thought, well, after that, I said, if I was ever a kit man, I'd make sure I brought absolutely everything I could. So I always did. I always brought absolutely everything I had just in case. But it just shows that in the League of Ireland, kit clashes are just something that's just, you just don't know the day nor the hour. So be prepared.
Yeah. Yeah, it's something that I've heard a lot, and it gets mentioned on Twitter quite a lot because there is an inordinate amount of kit clashes in League of Ireland, and kit clashes that tend to go ahead as well, where they're unfortunately not wearing the ideal kits that they should be wearing in each game. So it's a pity. Yeah, must try harder, I think.
Yeah, that's. I mean, how hard is it to look at the other seven teams? What's their home kit? Yeah, what do they normally wear away from home? Okay, and work it out from there. It's not, you know, it's not like you're trying to cover every eventuality. Like there's seven other teams, three or four of which wear blue. You know, it's not. It really isn't. It's not difficult at the start of the season to sit down and say, well, what colours won't clash with them? Anyway, but yeah.
Yeah. I have heard that. So naturally, there's a draw for you to come to go back into it, isn't there? With all these horror stories, you're getting that itch again that you want to go back to it. Surely,
100%. Oh yeah. Look, I mean, the way it works, it's horrible. It's almost like managing a team, being a kit man. You're waiting on somebody to leave or to decide they don't want to do it anymore. Or you're waiting on a manager to leave and for him to bring his kit man with him in the hope that you'll get a call, or that you might even be able to make a call. But it's kind of cutthroat. It's you know, like, I'm a kit man without a team, therefore I'm not a kit man. I want to be. I do want to go back into it. But kind of have to wait for, there's only 20 clubs in the League of Ireland, probably feasibly from, you know, where I'm living, there's maybe 14 of them that would be feasible. I kind of have to wait for one of them to actually need one or to actually want one. And if they do, then happy days. I'll be back on this time next year moaning about referees and moaning about other clubs and moaning about everything else. But yeah, at least I'll be happy.
Yeah. Okay, here's something else for you to moan about. Or maybe not. I might be wrong. What do you think of the new Ireland kits for the Euros?
I love the idea that they're different. I love that Umbro have actually done something different. Instead of just a tailored approach and a bland green shirt with a bit of white trim and the logo on it, and, ooh, look at this lovely shiny technology. I don't like the shirts, though. but I do like the idea that they've actually said, no, we're going to do something different. I do like the fact they've added orange. I do like the fact they've put in the kind of shade stripes, if that's the right way to put it, you know, the diagonal shade stripes that they actually have on the shirt. I think they could have done without the white bit on the side. I think maybe just a bit of orange trim or you know, I think with the green, the white and the orange is too much. I think it would have been better with just green and orange. I think it would have looked really strong with white shorts, because we wear white shorts, and that might have looked a bit odd, but if you put orange trim on it, and green socks with orange, even in the same style, but just leave out the white, I think it would have been very different, and I think it would have been striking. The away kit, if Everton hadn't had it last season, or the season before, as a standalone kit, I liked it. When I realised Everton had it beforehand, and it was kind of recycled, and I kind of went, meh, well, okay then. The grey kit, which is now the third kit, I loved. I just thought it was mental. I thought it was like, what are you thinking? It's just absolutely mental. Aesthetically, you know, the grey colour is never a great colour for a football kit, but I just really liked it. I just thought it worked. I thought it looked so different to anything else that was out there. I mean, on one hand, I can't moan about all the Nike teams looking the same. And then when Umbro do something mental, complain about that as well. So I think the grey kit was a very brave kit. Not very practical, but very brave. The white kit only came about when they realised they wouldn't be allowed to wear the grey. It was an afterthought. So I think they did well. If it was an afterthought, well, it shouldn't have been. But, you know, it was a good recovery. And the home kit, yeah, I like the orange on it. I'd have done it without the white, just see what it looked like. Just green, with just take out the white altogether and just leave the orange bits and just see what that looked like.
What about the other kits for the Euros? Nike we've touched on. Is there anything else that stands out for you?
Yes, Switzerland. Absolutely love the white Switzerland shirt. Again, okay. It's different. It reminds me of the Blackie Switzerland kit of the 80s. Blackie were this bizarre brand that seemed to not cut and sew, as in it starts out as a white shirt, and then they get these printing papers and put a design on it, and then the printing papers get heat pressed onto the shirt. So the design and all the logos are actually in the material of the shirt. Yeah. And it looked mental. It was the Swiss cross with kind of white and black. So I like the white Switzerland kit. I really do. The Puma template kits are nice, but they're template, talking Slovakia, you know, teams like that. Yeah. I don't know what's going on with Austria. Or white, black, white. I always thought that was their colours, but their home this time round is red, white, red, and they kind of look a little bit like Switzerland, but, you know, just looks a bit bizarre. The Adidas kits, it's a mixed bag, really, isn't it? I like the Germany kit. I think it's very German. Should have white socks though. Very German kit, and it looks okay.
Like where the goalkeeper socks, I think, are the exact same template. So, and they're in white, so they could, if they wanted to wear them, then they could wear the white socks from the goalkeeper kit, I think.
Yeah. Because I think a Jeremy kit should have white socks, but
yeah.
You know, the rest of the Adidas kits, I mean, Scotland, don't know what's going on there with white sleeves. I just, Northern Ireland with the navy blue sleeves, again, you know, like, I don't know what's happening there. That's just mental and not in a good way. Ukraine kit is coming for a lot of stick, but I like it. I like the kind of the funny tartan print on the front of it. It's relatively simple kit, but, you know, people don't like it. They just look at it and go, yeah, it's horrible. But I don't know. I think it's okay. The Nike kits. if you've seen one, you've seen them all. And that should never be. This is the European Championships. You have France and England, you know, reversed. To have England in white shorts and red socks and kind of a, I don't know what color blue you'd call that sleeve. It just, for me, it kind of gone, like, hang on, this isn't England. England wear white shorts, navy blue shorts and white socks. How difficult is that? I'm looking at it, I'm just going, no, that's not an England kit. It's just not. It's just something that I look at and I go, really, red socks as a home kit. Like, it just, Portugal in, I don't know, a kind of an all red ensemble with, again, different color socks. I can't remember, like green socks or something. Green socks possibly, but it just, for me, this Nike template just, no, it's just wrong. Yeah. It just doesn't do anything for me. And the execution of them, if you had the England kit in white, an off-white sleeve, if they really wanted to do the sleeves in different colors, but, you know, have the navy blue shorts and the white socks, it may not be too bad at all. It's just, I think with the white shorts and red socks, it just doesn't look like an England kit. And I just look at it and go, yeah, no, it's not for me.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I think maybe a white shirt with, as you say, off-white sleeves, maybe off-white, because all white for England, I think people have come round to that way of thinking. So England can wear all white as well as white shirt, navy shorts and white socks. But maybe if they had off-white sleeves, off-white shorts, and then normal white socks with off-white tops or something, that could have worked as well. But yeah, Nike do what they like, I suppose.
Well, that's it. As I said earlier, it's, you know, the one word that strikes me about Nike this year is conform. And I mean, for a brand that always go out and kind of, you know, tell you to be the best you can be and to be individual and to be different, it just kind of, I don't know, I'm just sitting here going, like all the teams are wearing the same kits, like, so we're now conforming, that's what we're doing. It's just conform to an ideal, and this is what kit should look like. But everyone has to conform to it, and it's just bewildering, to be honest. But sure, people will still buy them, and Nike will still make bucket loads of money, and I'll still be sitting here, you know, poor as church mouse going, oh well, not to worry.
Yeah, I've seen people wearing it. I was sitting in a house the other day, and I was looking out the window, and I saw in about a space of 10 minutes, I saw two people walk by with the England shirt on, the England away shirt on. And I just couldn't believe it, that the things actually selling. But you retail anything, you've got a tournament coming up, people will buy it, I suppose. So,
and that's the way it is. I mean, and as well as that, you see, I sometimes think that maybe you and I and you know, guys like us have a bit of a jaundiced view of some of these kits. We maybe overanalyze it. We maybe look at it and think of well, if they'd done this instead, or, you know, well, I don't understand why they did that. Whereas they just want to kind of, you know, it's an England shirt, it's a tournament coming up.
Yeah, that sounds about right. This has been great, Colin. Thanks so much for coming on. It's been a pleasure to talk to you. Just to give out some information, you're on Twitter, Colin J. Ford with an E. That's correct, isn't it?
That's correct. Yes, indeed. And you can follow my idle ramblings about football kits and food usually on that.
Okay. Just some other bits of news or certain things I need to get through. I've just seen that Zlatan Ibrahimovic has just released his new range, his own specific sports range. I don't know what that means or what it's in aid of, but I think he's made a lot of hints towards playing for Manchester United. So when this is published and people are listening to this, obviously you're probably well aware that he's signed for Manchester United, but that's just an interesting thing. The reason I bring it up is that it was part designed by Jason Lee, who we've former Adidas designer, now a freelance designer, who we had on this podcast a little while ago, a few months ago now, I suppose. So that was quite interesting. Chris Oakley, who took over this podcast while I was away, did a fantastic job talking about 70s kits with John Devlin. So thanks to John as well. Chris Oakley is on Twitter as Chris Oakley. He's also on there as Kitbliss 2016. He's got the Kitbliss website, which is fantastic as well. And John Devlin, True Colours Kits on Twitter, but people probably know this sort of stuff. So again, thank you, Colin. Thanks for coming on. Everyone should visit the website. We're designfootball.com, designfootball on Twitter, and designfootball.com on Facebook. So go and have a look at the website, give us a shout on all those things, and check out what's going on there. And I'm J29 is on Twitter if you want to speak to me. But thanks again, Colin. Thanks for coming on, and I'll speak to you soon.
Thanks very much, Jay. Look forward to it. Cheerio.
Cheers, Colin. Thanks a lot for that.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.